This is the Detroit Sports Podcast Network.
The biggest icon in podcasting.
Welcome in, everybody, to a very, very special edition of Doc and Jock. I am the Doc, John McAroon. Joining me, my guy Adam, the Jock Strozinski, and we are here. We have reached 500 podcast episodes here at Doc and Jock. Started a decade ago, moving into year 11. This project has been amazing, and to go every single week, everybody knows that Thursday, and you know what that means. It means it's time for Doc and Jock. And to be able to put together 500 straight weeks of content discussing all things Lions, Detroit Tigers, Pistons, Wings, the highs and the lows, the ups and the downs, the twists and the turns, the hirings and the firings, Doc and Jock were here to bring it to you. And it's an honor, a privilege that you guys kept downloading, reviewing, messaging, hating. It meant the world to Adam and I. And to be able to do it, whatever happens from here on out, we can say that we put together 500 audio broadcasts, not only just, you know, putting out shows, but consecutively, meaning that if you go down the annals of time from 2013 to 2023, on a Thursday, there is a new, fresh Doc and Jock. And we take pride in that. And it's been fun. It's probably, really, for those of you that know Doc, it saved me probably a shit ton of money because I would have to take Adam out to a bar every week and be like, you know, them motherfucking Spartans can't call a fucking foul when they're up three. You know how much beer I would have had to drink to get over that kind of bullshit that happens in Detroit sports when Tom Izzo can't figure out how to fucking coach at 68, 69 fucking years old? How much money I saved by just turning on a microphone? And that's the part my wife doesn't get when she's like, how much money did you spend on this? I'm like, you still don't understand how much I saved doing this podcast. Because we're at episode 500. We'll talk a little bit about some fun memories. It's been a great ride. How you doing, my bud?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we did it the other way around, our livers wouldn't have survived. Yeah. We would have been dead from cirrhosis probably about 5-6 years ago. So this saved both of our lives, I think. On top of it, you're talking about the ups and the downs of this 500th episode, doing these 500 straight weeks. There's been a lot of downs, man. There's been a lot of downs, which makes me excited for the next 500 because I really feel like at least with two of our four teams, we've got some ups coming. You know, we got the Lions. We've got the Red Wings. I feel like are tracking in the right direction. If we can get the Pistons moving in the right direction, it'll be a little bit better. And the Tigers, I don't know what to make of the Tigers yet. Spring training just kicked off. I got no clue what's going on with the Tigers, but I feel like we've had a lot of downs over the course of 500 episodes, which makes me excited for 500 more because I feel like there's a lot of ups that are coming our way, which is awesome.
Yeah, what's been a memory or two that you relish or a topic that we hit that sticks with you? What's been a great memory that you can recall throughout the 10-year run of this project?
So I think a couple things that immediately jump out to me. We've had some really awesome guests, and we've had some really good conversations with some of these guests. Going back all the way to when we were recording in your basement on your old laptop that used to freeze up in the middle of segments, we had Mark the Man Wilson, who was always a bit of an inspiration to me. He was one of those guys I looked up to very early on, and we had him on the show, and in the middle of recording, everything froze up. We had to stop. He was kind enough to restart with us. And it was a really good interview. And honestly, if you go back and listen to some of those first episodes, we weren't very good. And I don't know if we're any good now, but we've grown quite a bit and we're much better now than we were when episodes one through five, one through 10 dropped. Those are kind of some rough listens. So if you've been listening since day one, you kind of know that we have grown quite a bit. But Mark the Man Wilson's interview was great. I loved when Justin Rose was coming to the area from Pittsburgh. We had him on. We had a great conversation with him. And from that, a good friendship developed. We ended up developing a really good relationship. Matter of fact, I was on YouTube the other day, and one of the videos from when we used to do the little Channel 7 thing ended up popping up. So that was pretty cool. What else did we have? We had basically the hiring and the firing of all of the Lions coaches. You know, I remember recording in Brazil with you, and that's the cool thing about this, right? We've done this so much. We've done this in so many different places. I've been in Florida. I've recorded with you. I've been in Brazil. I've recorded with you. I've been all over the place, and I figured out a way to record with you, which has been absolutely fantastic. I remember being in Brazil, and I remember when Jim Caldwell was hired, and both of us just kind of being like, eh. He seems like he's the guy to get you to the water, but not lead you across the water. And you, so more than me, were on that train. And then Matt Patricia getting hired. And I remember you wanted to get the fire and the pitchforks and basically burn down Allen Park. I thought it was fantastic. So some of those things are the things that immediately stand out to me. And I relish and I think about. But what about for you?
Yeah, obviously, the biggest guest, one of the biggest podcasters in the world, was the biggest at the time, was Adam Carolla. What I loved about that is obviously naturally funny. What I loved was we initially got a denial, and then a whole year later we put in more work, which fueled us and grew it more and more to the point where they had an opportunity to put him on our schedule, and it worked out. So to have that was a real testament to being patient. And then for me, one of the greatest I was thinking about it as I was checking my notes here. One of the greatest anticipatory times for me to record the podcast was after Trouble with the Snap. It was one of the great moments for Spartan supporters because that wasn't the early tenure of Jim Harbaugh. And everybody said at the time, and go back and listen, we have all the archived Doc and Jock from around episode 25 or 26 on YouTube. You just go to YouTube and type in Detroit Sports Podcast and you can dig around. After Trouble with the Snap, after that game, when Jim Harbaugh arrived to town, it was supposed to be, oh, Michigan State's eradicated off the map. Like, it was never going to be a rivalry. And it was looking true to form that Michigan was going to maybe have a good run. It was at the Big House. They played really well. All they had to do was snap, hold, kick a punt, and they win the game. And I was a part of your one. At a watch party, it was just me being the lone Spartan supporter, a bunch of Michigan fans, and they're all talking their shit nonstop throughout the game, and you're just like, okay, fine, you know, it's just going to be the way it is. D'Antonio, it's going to have a new challenge, whatever it may be, here we come. And then all of a sudden, Trouble with the Snap happens, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I'm recreating it right now in my head. I spun like a top, and I let out like a primal scream. Kind of, if you're a wrestling fan, like Roman Reigns, kind of jumping up and putting his arm out, almost doing a, yeah, and just screaming at the top of my lungs in excitement. And the next thought was, I can't wait to record with Adam. I can't wait for all the shit that I probably said, oh, I'm going to tweet this shit right now. I can't wait to turn on the podcast and talk about one of the great games that was ever played between these two. It's not going to be topped. The only thing that would top that, if you're a Michigan fan, is if State gets up to a huge lead and it's two teams that are undefeated and then Michigan comes back. And then I got to live it in person as a member of the media. The podcast allowed Adam and I to branch out into the media as well. Got to be at Spartan Stadium when Kenneth Walker destroyed Aiden Hutchinson for multiple touchdowns. So two victories that cemented what it's about is like, I can't wait to talk about these games. And of course, the tough losses were there, but my goodness, man, it's been fun. It's been a fun journey. And yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The ability to grow and to get a little bit better along the way in 10 years from the time we started, when you look at episodes 85 and 95 versus episodes 400, 500, it's been great. And it makes it really fun to do. It makes it fun because of the openness of it. And I think what also for me, before we get to the next topic, what makes it fun was the early haters saying that podcasting is not media, not traditional, not going to be anything. It's just people doing shit in their basement. Well, I think it's been proven wrong that plenty of people have found a niche in it, and it's proven to be great for people going on vacation, even if you're working out. The podcast platform is not going anywhere. Even today, it's great. I love it. I feel like the universe always brings it back to people hating. Guys, you have to look at it that Doc and Jock did not buy, did not spend $1 billion to acquire talent. So when you see current reports saying, oh, podcasting could take a step back because Spotify or Tom Brady let go of some people, you got to remember it's not just podcasting, it's business. And it's similar to these leagues that are spending $1 billion for football. Well, if you spend $1 billion from your bank and you make back $845 million, that's a problem. Doc and Jock never did that. We kept to the platform where we said, hey, be profitable, be simple. Don't take on talent that are going to break your bank. Don't take on talent that are going to do this. So if you run a regular business correctly or do the podcast correctly, it's a viable platform to do a wonderful amount of storytelling, of creative interviewing, getting to know people. And now the blessing, which for me warms my heart to the nth degree, is when these athletes now are joining up with media networks. They're getting their own. They're getting the bag in the podcast game, which in turn always gives credibility to those that took a chance on it back in 2013 or 2009 when Adam Carolla did it. So shout out to Adam Carolla, the godfather, who made this all possible by taking it to the next level. And for us that, you know, continue to believe in what it could be. So let's go, baby. Let's talk about some shit in the world of Detroit sports. I'm very excited this episode. We got a lot to get to with the Wings and the Lions. The combine's going on. So the Underwear Olympics are going on. So I get a chance to collect my thoughts about Mr. Tom Izzo. Because it's the Underwear Olympic time. It's a little bit, you know, now some negative news has come out on this Wednesday. And we'll talk about that. But for the Lions, I'm curious. What positions do you think you're going to focus in on throughout the next 4 days as the combine kicks off with the workouts on Thursday? It's a great time, man, to sit back and look at 40 times, look at any news that comes out with interviews, and to look at the prospects. If you go to All Lions, go look and check out. We have a contributor, a great contributor, that had a chance to talk to Noah Sewell, and he wants to be part of the Lions. So you'll get inside stuff like that as well, because it's a good time. Even though we're not out there at Indy, there's so much to talk about. And I can't wait to pick your brain on how you think this combine could help the Lions.
Yeah, and look, I think we both agree that the Lions aren't close to being a finished product. There's still a lot that has to get taken care of and a lot that has to get wrapped up. And when I was going through making my list of positions that the Lions need to pay attention, it was really defensively stacked. It was incredibly defensively heavy. And I think D-line and cornerback are one and two. And it could be 1A, 1B. It doesn't matter. However you want to slice it. Those are the top two positions I think this team has to pay a lot of attention to. You've got to figure out a way to really fill that gap in the middle. You need to strengthen the defensive tackle position on this team. As well as, I know everybody says James Houston was this miracle talent. He was miraculous last year, and he did a great job in a very limited amount of games and with limited reps. That being said, I still think you need to go out and you have to add another piece to the edges. I think cornerback, obviously, I don't know if we have a number one cornerback on this team. As good as Jeff Okuda did last year, and as much as he made me eat my words down the course of the stretch of the season, I think he has taken a couple steps back. I don't think he's the guy that we all thought he was going to be, and whether it was from his injury, 2 years ago, or whether it's just his overall talent. I don't think he is necessarily the guy who's going to live up to that third overall pick. So I think cornerback is a position that needs to get targeted. Amani Oruwariye seemed to really play himself off of this team last year. So obviously he's not coming back. You've got Jerry Jacobs. I think we all like Jerry Jacobs, but it really feels like he has a bit of a ceiling, and that ceiling isn't incredibly high. So I think D-line and cornerback are two positions that they immediately have to target, as well as linebacker. We both agree that the linebacking core is pretty thin, I think. And then I think there are other positions that aren't as great of a need, but still need to be addressed with this draft. Or at least they need to pay attention to these positions with this draft. And I think safety is one of them. Offensive line, whether it be interior or whether it be the exterior of the offensive line. I'd like to get a guy who can either play center or can play guard and has the ability to do both would be ideal. And then the hot button topic and the Lions drafting at six, this is going to possibly play a role in what actually takes place when we get to the draft is quarterback. Anthony Richardson has been mocked to the Detroit Lions a lot. That's a guy, obviously, I think we're going to take a lot of stock in. We're going to pay a lot of attention because he has been mocked to the Lions, whether it be at 6 or whether it be at 18. He's also a guy who can really help transform what the Lions end up doing in this draft. If the Lions don't necessarily feel high on him and another team does, there might be a possible trade potential there where the Lions could maybe move back, acquire a couple of picks maybe for next year, a couple of picks for this year. What I will tell you is I've done a lot of stuff on a couple different simulators and a couple different mock draft simulators. And every time it gets to 6, there's always a trade option. And sometimes it's 1, sometimes it's 6 different trade options. But I feel very confident going into this draft that the Lions are going to have the ability to move around. And I'm very confident that the Lions will have the ability to move back and possibly collect a couple of draft picks for next season, which I'm really hopeful for, because I think next year's quarterback class could be much better than this one. And this quarterback class, I feel, is much better than last year's quarterback class. And I think if you could pair some of these picks and possibly move up, go get your future quarterback, I think this team would be in a really good spot. So I myself am excited for what the Underwear Olympics present. I've got a list of guys that I'm going to be paying attention to. I want to know what positions you are paying attention to, and then if we can delve into some of the guys that you're maybe watching as the Underwear Olympics get underway here.
Yeah, for sure. Cornerback and defensive lineman, for sure. I think that obviously Devin Witherspoon is the name that's really the most popular that's linked with the Lions at number 6. I'm curious if the Lions...
He's my number one guy in the secondary that I'm looking at.
Yeah, most people want to see what his measurables look like. I think he probably odds-on favorite right now. But the other dude that I keep seeing his wingspan, and it's freaking me out because of how awesome it is, and I'm reading the transcript right now, and I'm going to send it to you of what he said at the combine. I think that Tyree Wilson is a freak athletically. And when he puts his hands on you, I think that if you can... maybe get Tyree Wilson at 6 and Porter or Gonzalez at 18, or finagle an opportunity to find a cornerback that you like later.
But what
on.
If Witherspoon was the fall to you? I mean, I've just seen a recent mock draft where Witherspoon was picked up by the Lions at 18.
Yeah. If you want me to be where I have to change my pants, for me right now, the change my pants first round is 1 offensive player, 1 defensive player. I want Tyree Wilson at 6 and Bijan Robinson at 18. And then forget it. I'm done for the night. Give me a cigarette. I can relax and go to bed early, because you've addressed a need along your defense and you've punched a hole directly into the heart of other NFL teams, saying, hey, go try and stop this guy who can do it all. The next Saquon Barkley is what he's called. Who would not want that on the team? You know, people always act like, "Oh my God, we need two defenders right away."
Me. Yeah, I know. I don't want that on this team.
Oh my
gosh,
you don't want the next Saquon Barkley, the next Emmitt Smith, the next Barry Sanders.
Because he is that. Is he though?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Look, what have you won with Saquon Barkley? Have you won anything with Saquon?
A playoff game.
The answer is no.
A playoff game.
And how impactful during that playoff game was he?
Good enough.
I mean, look, you can build your team around that run game, and that's fine. If you build your team around that run game, you're actually building it around your offensive line, and that's what's most important, because you can go get a guy out of the 5th, 6th, 7th round. You can go get him out of mothballs as a free agent and bring them in, plug them in, and you're going to get some production out of them. You don't need to invest a first-round draft pick in a running back. Running backs' careers, their lifespan in the NFL – are so short. I hate wasting first-round draft picks on running backs because the span on them is so small. Look at what the Chiefs just did, right? I think you agree. The Chiefs are a pretty good organization, right? They got a pretty good quarterback there. They got a pretty good head coach. They got some Hall of Fame talent, whether it be on the coaching staff or whether it be in the front office or even whether it be on the field. Look what they just did. They made it to the Super Bowl, and they won the Super Bowl with a 7th-round pick. Isaiah Pacheco was a 7th-round pick out of Rutgers that they grabbed, plugged in, and he did everything for him. And there were talks going into this year that he was going to be the guy to overtake Clyde Edwards-Helaire at some point. Helaire ends up getting hurt, and that was all Pacheco needed. He was running with the ball all day. I don't think you need to invest in a first-round running back. Now, look, if Bijan Robinson is there in the 2nd round and you want to move up to go get him, I'm cool with that. I just don't like wasting first-round picks on running backs just because – that 5th-year option, So important, right? And if you can get that fifth-year option on two guys who are going to be impact players for this defense for the next 5 years, and you're going to give yourself an opportunity to restructure a contract with them for another 4 years after that, that's what I want. The running back, I have a lot of concerns for running backs. I mean, look at what DeAndre Swift. DeAndre Swift was supposed to be the second coming of Christ, wasn't he? And where has DeAndre Swift been? Generally on an IR table with somebody working on him. So running back scares me. I don't necessarily want to take a running back at 18. If somebody else wants to move up and take a running back at 18, I'm cool with moving back and collecting more picks. But that's just how I see it. I don't want the running back.
Oh, man. I look at it like with that offensive line, you want to build control. How do you help your defense? Control the running, control the line of scrimmage. It would help. And look, you say running back's lifespan is short. Because so is the window potentially for the Lions. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Penei Sewell, Jameson Williams. You will not keep them all. So you're going to be turning over the roster. So if you get that opportunity to get the guy that you believe, if you believe that guy on tape can get breakaway touchdowns, can control the ball and third and four, can give you that extra oomph at a rookie price, you do it. You don't operate out of fear because you still got – you got five picks in the top 85 to address the defense. You can use second-round picks, third-round picks, trades. You can do a lot of things. Remember, talent, culture, and the ability to be a game-changer. I think Bijan has it. I don't think he's going to be there, so you don't have to worry. But, man, pay attention to that guy's name. I think he's going to do some things. I think he'll be one of the next guys. Could be the next Jonathan Taylor. Could be the next Saquon Barkley. And a team that gets him is going to be very, very impressed with what that kid can bring to the table. Yeah, obviously.
How do you feel about, since you're so high on running backs, how do you feel about a guy like Jamar Gibbs or maybe even Zach Charbonnet, former Michigan product? You can maybe get Zach Charbonnet in the third round. You could probably get Jamar Gibbs second round. What do you feel about those guys?
No, I do feel like the Lions could get a lot out of any running back. I'm looking at the home run. I'm looking at being that you do have the extra first-round pick, I'm taking the chance. But yeah, if they do target a running back, there's probably others very much so that could be targeted in later rounds, which I think right now is the odds-on favorite for what they'll do. So yeah, absolutely, those will be great names. And the blessing is you have an offensive line that has been built to succeed and succeed right away. So it makes it fun. On the quarterback front, Anthony Richardson's the talk of the draft. I know that the Lions have scouted him extensively. I know that he is the buzz. He's the sexy name. I just don't see the Lions putting the pressure on Jared Goff in that way. That right away signals to everybody, oh, bad game, put in Richardson. Oh, a couple interceptions in game three in a one-and-run record, put in Richardson. I think that you are way better if you can find the likes of a Clayton Tune, Jake Haener, Max Duggan, somebody that can be developed, you know, that can do the job and have the opportunity to play at a high level in later rounds. I think you got to draft a backup at this point because of the way this team is built, the man love that's been shown from Ben Johnson to Jared Goff and the love that's been in return, that you're not drafting Goff's replacement in 2023. That's just not happening. If you can get a developmental quarterback and you can start doing that and we can start to see what that process looks like, I'm all aboard. I just would be floored if Richardson is there for the Lions at 18, and I'd be really floored if they took him at number six.
Yeah, it would blow my mind if they took him at six right now, just because if you look at what he's done in what I think it's like 13 games at Florida, the completion percentage is just so abysmal and it's so low. Now, like, yeah, this guy is explosive. His legs make magic and he's got the ability to throw bombs down the field. But I don't necessarily know if that translates at the next level. I don't necessarily know if that is the type of quarterback that can help you win games at the next level. To me, he seems like he's a little bit of a bigger, thicker, stronger Denard Robinson. And we all kind of seen what Denard Robinson was. He ended up transitioning to a running back, and he wasn't very good at that at the next level. So Anthony Richardson's the guy I'm going to be watching closely because, again, he is mocked in quite a few mock drafts to the Lions. I would be floored if they took him at six. Honestly, I would be upset if they took him at 18. I do trust Brad Holmes, but I just don't know about that pick. A guy who I'm really curious about, and that's Dorian Thompson-Robertson as far as quarterback goes. He's a guy who you might be able to get in the fifth round. And that's a guy who you're talking about developing. This is a guy you can bring in and you can work with him and you can develop. A guy who can do a couple things with his legs, a guy who has a pretty good completion percentage and can throw the ball, a guy who can work under center, and a guy who can work out of the shotgun. So he has some versatility, and he seems like he's a guy who just needs to be refined a little bit. Now, obviously not the talent that a guy like Bryce Young or CJ Stroud or even what Will Levis is projecting to be, but he's a guy who you can develop, and maybe you find a piece of gold there and you can shine it up real nice. D-line, obviously you've got Will Anderson. A lot of news came out on Wednesday regarding Jalen Carter. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Tyree Wilson, a guy who you're incredibly high on. Brian Breze, Luca Van Ness, Sia Ika, the defensive tackle out of Baylor. Gervin Dexter, it's a guy who I think you could probably get in the second round, maybe third round if you don't get your D tackle early on in the first round. Derek Hall, Kalaja Kansi, defensive tackle. I think he's out of Georgia Tech. Those guys are guys on that D line that I'm looking at. And look, I think they're going to have to fill a roster spot with one of those draft picks in the first three rounds. You're going to have to address your D end, and you're probably going to have to address your defensive tackle. Defensive tackle takes a little bit more precedence over that D end spot. As far as secondary goes, Devin Witherspoon is the number one guy on my list. After that, Christian Gonzalez, Joey Porter Jr., Kylie Ringo. Eli Ricks is a guy who, if the value's not there early in that first round, Eli Ricks is a guy who you might be able to get in that second, maybe third round, depending on how the draft plays out. So that's a guy who I'm looking at maybe possibly being somebody you can snatch. Maybe you get two cornerbacks in this draft, so he might be a guy you can grab. Brian Branch, the safety. J.L. Skinner, a guy who might be there in the third round. Chris Smith. Jordan Battles, another guy who you might be able to get a little bit later on that second day of the draft, as well as Sidney Brown. Linebacker is a position that I feel really strong about, right? I think you got, as the season went on, Alex Anzalone played well. I thought he did a much better job. Now, I don't think Alex Anzalone is a great NFL player. I don't think he's a very good NFL player. I think he's incredibly average. So I think you need to look to move on from Alex Anzalone. Me personally, I would love to do that in free agency. And there's a couple of names out there that we talked about last week that I would love to go get. So if you missed that, tune into last week's program, check it out. But this and with this upcoming draft and with the Underwear Olympics going on, Trent Simpson is a guy I'm looking at. Drew Sanders is a guy who I think the Lions will have a shot at probably around 18. Noah Sewell's come out and basically said he wants to play in Detroit. He wants to play with his brother. That's a guy who I've seen going either late second round or even in the third round. Jake Campbell's another guy, Iowa linebacker, that I've seen going in the third round that you can get. I think Jake Campbell's stock could really rise with what goes on at the combine. Jake Campbell comes out and runs a really nice 40. Expect him to get elevated to that second round. Ivan Pace, it's another linebacker that I'd be looking at again. And then we've kind of talked about quarterbacks. Look, I've got zero interest in a guy like Will Levis. I've got zero interest in a guy like Anthony Richardson. I think you have to think about it. You have to think about taking a quarterback if Bryce Young falls to you at six, if CJ Stroud falls to you at six. I think those are the two guys that are going to make you kind of pause, wait, think about it. And then you've got to decide either we're trading back or we're taking this guy. Because franchise quarterbacks don't come around all that often. And it's been weird because each time the Detroit Lions, at least the last, what, three seasons, they've had a chance at getting a franchise quarterback twice. And they've been in this weird position where it just doesn't seem like they're going to do it. They end up taking Jeff Okuda instead of taking Justin Herbert. And they also punted on Tua. And then said they took Okuda. This year, there's the possibility we'll have to see how the draft plays out. But some teams might be scared of Bryce Young's size. So Bryce Young might fall to you at six. CJ Stroud might fall to you at six. His play was a little bit inconsistent last year. Had a really, really good game against Georgia in a defense that's going to put another ton of guys in the draft and in the NFL. He had a really, really good game against those guys. And then, again, Will Levis, a guy I'm not really interested in, but he's your prototypical quarterback. He's got the size. He's got the look. He can spin the ball well. I'm just not interested in Will Levis. Will Levis kind of strikes me as a little bit of like Josh Wilson. Maybe he's not so cancerous in the locker room, and maybe he's not a bit of a diva like Wilson, but just kind of when I look at them and I kind of look at the tape and I kind of where they're at, it, to me, it just screams Josh Wilson, just not the locker room cancer. So that's just kind of what I'm looking at. We both seem to really agree and really feel that the Detroit Lions need to address the cornerback position on this team. How would you go about doing that? Would you do it through the draft? Would you do it through free agency, or would you do it through trade? If you had to pick one way to address it, what would be the way that you would address it? Because I do feel like this position can get addressed in a number of different ways. This position can get addressed in a combination of ways. You could trade for a guy like Ramsey. You could address it in free agency by signing a couple of guys, and you can also bring in a draft pick at 6 or 18 if you really wanted to. So you could do this a couple different ways. But ideally, you only get one choice. How would you go about doing this?
One choice is free agency, and you don't go high end. You don't go Bradbury, Ramsey. You go kind of Sutton from Steelers. You go mid-range. I know that the top-end corners are going to want big money. Sutton's going to command a little bit too, $9, $10 million probably. But we'll see what the market looks like for the cornerbacks, because it's such a coveted spot. And that's why the Lions might take a chance on a drafted quarterback, a drafted defensive back. But in a win-now situation, you want a player that's proven. So I kind of hope that maybe they do both. You know, they take a look at somebody that can be on the field right away. And you got to remember, you still got Fatu Melifonwu that's developing. You still got Jerry Jacobs and Jeff Okuda that hopefully they expect to continue their development. So I'm hoping for at least one or two defensive backs that can come in and compete. Because either way, I do believe that the Lions are going to, just based off of the ability now that they have with salary cap, adding $10 million by cutting Michael Brockers, you now have a little bit more flexibility. You still can cut Romeo Okwara. You still can cut Big V. You still can add another, you know, potential $15 million or so to the cap. So you have opportunities to make the move. I am curious, are you all aboard trading for Jalen Ramsey? Because the number that bothers me is he's going to be 29 years old. Mm-hmm. It just starts the process to me of where a cornerback starts to kind of take a dip down. But at the same time, look at Darius Slay. Look what he brought to the table. The Eagles fans would say it's well worth it. But in Detroit, it's going to be costly. He's going to want a new deal, and it could cost you draft capital. It's going to cost you a second-round pick. It's going to cost you probably one this year and next year. Les Snead's not going to be like, yeah, Brad, I'm going to give you the hometown discount here. I'm going to make it so that we don't get what we need. I just would pass. Good player. Would be nice if they did do it. I think that splashes are great. It would definitely be an interesting person to talk to and get experiences from regarding Brad Holmes and all that kind of stuff. I just think the price is a little bit too rich.
Yeah, I would tend to stay away, and I'd stay away for a couple of different reasons. One, he's a huge personality, and you are going through the process of building your locker room. I don't necessarily know if he would be a guy that I would want to bring in. He's been incredibly outspoken about a lot of different things. And I feel like this locker room and this culture is finally starting, the seeds are starting to take root, and you're starting to see the fruits of that labor. I don't know if I bring him in, because I don't know if he messes that up. Now, maybe he's a great locker room guy, but just some of the small interactions that I have seen, he's a guy that would scare me as far as a locker room presence go. Also, you're right, he's a little bit older. He's 29. 30 is generally the year that you're on the downside of your career as a cornerback. And 30 in the NFL is a bit of a dangerous number. You generally want everybody on the other side of 30. And you're going to bring him in. He's got 3 years left on a contract. So it gives you a little bit of time. But from what I've seen from Jalen Ramsey's play is he's 29 now, and I think he's had a bit of a regression over the last two seasons. That being said, he still puts up fantastic numbers. This guy was playing at such a high when he was in his prime. So you're talking about taking a couple steps back from that. He's still arguably a top 10 cornerback in the league. All that being said, I've already seen a bit of the decline over the last two seasons with him. I don't necessarily want to be on the hook to pay him, what is it, $47 million over the next 3 years. I don't want to be on the hook for that contract, and you're going to get that continued slippage, because generally at this point, players don't get better. Once you hit 30, you're not getting better. You're not getting faster. Your reaction time is not getting any better. So I don't want to be on the hook for that. I don't want to give up anything to get that either, whether it would be a first round pick or whether it be a second round pick. So trading for a guy is kind of off my board. And I would agree with you. I think free agency is probably the way to go because cornerback is a position that it usually takes a year, sometimes 2 years, to really learn and develop. So you go out and you bring a free agent in, and instantly they're kind of in the mix, they're in the groove, and they're performing for you. It helps you with that win now mentality where I think going into next season, expectations are high for this Detroit Lions team. Expectations are no longer 8 wins is acceptable. It has to be more. You have to win the division is what it kind of feels like, and you have to get into the playoffs. You need to be hosting that playoff game next season. That's a lot of pressure. It's going to be a lot of pressure on this coaching staff and this front office, so you're going to have to get things right. All that being said, I feel like I would go the route of the draft, and I would kind of live and learn with some of those bumps and bruises that a guy like a Witherspoon might make, or a guy like a Joey Porter might make. But trading for a guy like Jalen Ramsey, I'm not willing to give a first round pick up for him. I'm not willing to give up 2 second round picks for him. I don't necessarily want him in my locker room, so I'm steering clear. Do you have any interest in bringing Jalen Ramsey here?
No, not really. Like I said, if he was 26, absolutely, I'd
be a little bit different, right?
A little bit different, and he didn't command big time dollars. He doesn't have to renegotiate. Teams probably will want to. He's going to be due $17 million, so that's why it's going to be interesting to see if any team does kind of take on that hefty price tag for the coming year. Obviously, you see that why the Rams want to do it. They want to save money off the cap. I'm curious, you know, yeah, I just think that you can do it cheaper because you have the 6th pick, and Devin Witherspoon could do the same thing and over time, and you have the opportunity to pick up a defensive back that can be a ball hawk as well. And you also have a guy on your team that's young that hopefully with the coaching of Dre Bly and Brian Duker can take the next step in a Fatu Melifonwu. He was a draft pick. You have invested some stock in what he can do, so you hope that he can kind of take a step forward as well. That would be a big, huge help. I'm curious because this week at the Combine, some big releases have started to be announced. Most notably, Carson Wentz and Marcus Mariota. None of them will sniff a starting job, I don't believe, in the NFL anytime soon. Their run of luck has come to an end in regards to starting situations. Obviously, they got to wait for another team's quarterback to get hurt if they're potentially on a roster to get out there on the field. But I think that Marcus Mariota, because of the factor that he brings his mobility, I think he'd be great at an affordable price. Put him back there, and that way you have kind of one of every quarterback because if you guys are paying attention, because of the chaos that was created by the 49ers game where they basically had to kind of find a fan out of the stand and play quarterback and just basically say, hey, hand it off. They probably will institute a new rule that will allow the emergency third quarterback. So if you have a young quarterback that you drafted, let's just say Clayton Tune, you got the rookie that you're developing, you got the experienced vet in Marcus Mariota, and you got Jared Goff in that room, that's a solid room. Now, I'm not saying Marcus Mariota is going to, you know, take it to where you could win 9 games if Goff is done for the year, but you're hoping that Goff, if, for example, he gets dinged up a little bit and he just has a sore ankle for like a second, he needs to take 3 plays off. If you need somebody to make a play on 2nd and 8 and potentially use his legs, or you need just that one drive in a game where Goff gets knocked out, Marcus Mariota could do the job because you guys got to remember there's talent around him at all across the board. That could be something that could be very, very, if it's not, I don't think Carson Wentz fits. And because if you can't recreate the magic with Doug Peterson, I just think that puts you in a tough spot from where you are. And I just think that Carson Wentz days maybe numbered in the league. I think Marcus Mariota is intriguing as a veteran backup.
Yeah, I think Mariota is a little bit more intriguing than Carson Wentz. To me, it feels like Carson Wentz is done. There's not a whole lot left. And really with Carson Wentz, it seems like it's a lot of decision-making that has kind of cost him his career, not protecting the football and just throwing it to the wrong colored jersey. But that being said, Mariota, I think, is interesting. Mariota ended up leaving Atlanta under some very weird circumstances. There's a couple of YouTube videos out there if you get a chance to check them out. But it really seems as though he was informed that they were going to go with Desmond Ridder as the quarterback, and he kind of threw a little bit of a tantrum. And next thing you know, he's like, I'm not showing up. And it sounded like it was very contentious at the very, very end. So I don't know if Mariota is in a position where he believes he can still be a starting quarterback. And if he is, that's great. But if you're going to come to Detroit, you need to know that you're sitting behind Jared Goff. Jared Goff is the quarterback. I like what Mariota brings. I don't know if he necessarily fits in this scheme. I don't necessarily know if he fits what this offense is. I think Mariota would be better served going to a place like Baltimore. I think Baltimore would be a great spot because you've got a quarterback in Lamar Jackson where has shown the propensity to be dinged up and injured a little bit. Mariota, I think, is a better thrower of the football than Lamar Jackson is. I think he gives you a little bit more upside with his arm while Lamar Jackson gives you more upside with his legs. But I feel like that offense, he can slide in and he's going to give you a couple of different looks and give you a little bit of difference, but you can still keep the offense pretty much the same. You don't have to completely reconfigure your offense to suit what he does well. I think Marcus Mariota going to San Francisco would be interesting if they figure out what they're doing with their quarterback situation, because they've got Trey Lance and they've got Brock Purdy. And we're not really sure where Brock Purdy is going to be. And Trey Lance, is that a guy you want to give up on right away? So San Francisco's super interesting what they're going to end up doing with their quarterback room. But the whole thing is we're trying to build the Detroit quarterback room similar to what they've got going on in San Francisco, where you can just kind of slide a guy in and there's not going to be a letdown. He's going to be a guy who can win you some games. I don't think Carson Wentz gives it to you. I think Marcus Mariota, I think you'd have to probably change too much of your offense to make him work. And I don't necessarily know that he comes in not thinking that he doesn't want to be that starting quarterback. And that's not necessarily what you're looking for here. So it'll be interesting to see what this team does as far as addressing the backup quarterback position.
But it's going to be it. But remember, Brad Holmes has said now multiple times, he said it after the season and he said it this week, it's going to be a priority. They knew they basically were left with their pants down,
yeah,
trying to figure
sure.
it out. He's been nice to and cordial about Nate Sudfeld, but he said, we got to mm-hmm. upgrade the room. We're getting more
yep.
talent. So guys, they are drafting a quarterback. There is no way they go with two free agents and there's no way they go with two quarterbacks. He said, we're upgrading the room. Mm-hmm. They've been honest in that. They've said, we're making it an offseason priority, because at the same time, you need to push Jared Goff. Yeah, he's the starter, and yeah, everybody knows it. Yeah, he gives you the best chance to win, but you also want to continue his development by having guys that he can talk to, guys that he can bounce ideas off of, guys that will push him a little bit, give him that little extra edge. And I love that Ben Johnson came out on the Lions team podcast and said that they have a plan to get Jared Goff better. They know he did some things that weren't well. They know that he held the ball too long. They know that he got turnover prone in certain spots. So they have a plan to get him better.
Let me ask you this, because I kind of agree with you, right? I think the way that the Lions are going to approach is they're going to sign somebody through free agency and they're going to go out and they're going to take a late round flyer on a guy. Maybe
yes.
It's DTR. That's the late round flyer.
Yep.
We'll find out. We're not 100% sure. But you've got some guys out there who have shown the ability to win games, and you've got they have the ability to help strengthen a room. You've got a guy like Baker Mayfield who's out there. I don't necessarily want him here. There's a guy like Sam Darnold who really seemed to have showed some maturation in Carolina. I don't necessarily know if he's a winner, but he's a guy who you can put in a tough spot, and I think he could get the job done. Jimmy Garoppolo would be ideal, but I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is coming here to be a backup either. I think a guy like Case Keenum, who's available, he's a little bit older, but that's a guy who can come in, and he's a guy who's been there, done that. It's a guy who's won games. That's a guy who shows an incredibly high ceiling. How do you feel about a guy like Case Keenum, or maybe even a guy like Jacoby Brissett coming in and being that veteran presence, and then going out drafting a late round guy, and basically, I think right there, that quarterback room is 10 times better than it was
yeah.
last year.
You like to listen, the oldest player on the team is 29. I don't want to go older than 29. So Case may be out of the question. We'll see. That's probably the name that they would go with, someone that's comfortable. That's very wise. I think that to be astute, that probably could be the name that they target.
What about Mike White? I love Mike White.
Mike White. See, that's what I'm saying. Competition. That would be great too as well. You know, that's the move I want to make. I think that you want to be bold, somebody that can bring a little swagger, bring a little bit of something. I just think that he's got something where maybe a team takes a flyer and makes him the starter. But if he would take a backup job again, Mike White's perfect.
Mike White's great.
Mike White's perfect. Case Keenum, I think, probably is the guy. But it's interesting to see because it just kind of feels like a lateral move from Nate Sudfeld. But
what about Teddy Bridgewater? Bridgewater's 30, so he's a guy who has shown the ability to win games.
Yeah,
hasn't really showed the ability to stay healthy when he's been put into games, though.
Absolutely, I think that makes it fun to talk about in terms of now with this free agency situation with a little bit more funds, we get a chance to see what the Lions front office is valuing. Are they valuing Goff's comfort? Are they valuing talent? Are they valuing a potential, worst case scenario? You know
who I would love? I'm just going through this list of free agent quarterbacks.
Who's that?
Tyler Heinicke. Tyler Heinicke is a guy who
perfect fit. That's a perfect fit as well.
Biggest games, the guy just shows up. And look, he's not going to have a pretty touchdown to interception ratio, but that is a guy who just, when you need to ball out, he can ball out. He can win you a game.
Yeah, so on the comfort level, Mariota, Case Keenum, and Heinicke make you feel a lot more comfortable. A little more risky, in my mind, is, you know, the likes of Bridgewater and things like that. So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. But it's coming, guys, March 15th. So that indicates that in a couple podcasts, we'll be breaking down and looking at Lions free agency, which will be so fun. Now we come to the portion of the podcast where we bitch and complain, or at least the Spartan fan in the podcast will bitch and complain, because I can't believe I was subjected to watching the Michigan State Spartans not be able to execute fundamentally one of the easiest coaching decisions that fourth graders can figure out. And I guess we got to do a PSA, a Doc and Jock PSA for all college coaches, because Michigan then, in turn, which pissed me off even more, got lucky and had a coach make the same stupid-ass mistake with them. Real simple PSA, podcast PSA number 55 from Doc and Jock. When your basketball team in college or in the National Basketball Association is up by 3 points, what you need to do, real simple, it starts with F, and no perverts, not that. It's foul. Foul the opposition. F-O-U-L, foul. Real simple. Follow it, love it, understand it, embrace it. Why? Because when you're up 3 and you foul, you give your opponent only 2 free throws, as opposed to not fouling, which lets the opposition have a chance at 3 points, which will tie the fucking game. Can it not be any clearer? It needs to be said again. If you're up 3, foul. It is so easy that coaches want to play like, I want to be a hard ass and have my defense do stuff. I hate to say it, Tom. I hate to say it for all you defensive basketball coaches. I hate to say it's for Mr. Dwayne Casey. Nobody gives a fuck about defense. It's not included and relevant. You have to take the edges when you can. I don't care if you got the number one NBA defense in the world. The game is made for offenses. Scoring, shooting threes, making threes. Hunter Dickinson flings up the ball and makes a 3. Do you not get it? Stop being prideful. Nobody gives a fuck about your defense. Nobody can name a defensive guru after Dennis Rodman and Ben Wallace. Nobody cares. Foul. Take the win. Don't collapse. Man, that was frustrating to see Tom Izzo basically cost his team. And we've sat here and recorded many episodes saying Tom Izzo's past his prime, done his thing. But man, when you're that stubborn and you keep repeating the same mistakes and your team collapses, that's a reflection of coaching. And yes, the team is 18-11. They rebounded nicely against Northwestern. Give them credit. I know they're going through a lot of things, but this is something Tom Izzo has been known for in regards to stubbornness and embracing what a lot of people understand to be facts. If you foul, or hell, play some real defense and not let Iowa jack up every single 3 known to man and make it and not have a response. You can't give up that many points and give up a double-digit lead with less than a minute left. That was a win, and coaching took that away, and it's been happening far too often with Tom Izzo. Now he's getting a reprieve because everybody's basically on their knees loving what his recruiting class is going to be. But I hate to say it, going into his big class, I'm worried Tom Izzo's not going to get the most out of him. I'm worried at this point with Tom Izzo because of the fact that what his plan of attack has been lately, coaching and the talent and not going into the portal, has just been ultimately disappointing. This, it just has a feel that Tom Izzo has plateaued and the magic that has usually been there in March is gone. 18-11 is a good record, but when you give up three potential losses that are maybe the fault of coaching, something's wrong.
Give me one sec. I'll be right back. Yeah, I mean, at this point, I kind of feel like this is Tom Izzo's MO at this moment in time. I mean, I think we are far past Tom Izzo being that dominant head coach. You go back to 2019. That was when he ended up getting to the national semis. They ended up losing to Texas Tech. It's been a long time since we've been with Tom Izzo where he's getting you to the national championship game, much less being able to close the national championship game. I think these mental lapses, these brain farts, these are all things that are signatures of Tom Izzo's teams recently. Not so much in the past, but recently. I think gone are the days where we used to look at what Tom Izzo would do, where he would just run his team through the absolute blender early in the season to get them basically ready and prepared to play in the national championship games. I think we're gone from that now. I don't know if that actually works with today's athlete. I don't know if that works with the classes that Tom Izzo is recruiting. And yeah, he's got a good class coming in, but I don't know how that translates. I don't know how that ends up working out going forward. You know, I feel like some of the issue with Tom Izzo is he's been an absolute fantastic coach, right? And who am I to tell Tom Izzo anything? But I think some of the stubbornness with Tom Izzo has cost him at times. And I think that's part of the problem with Tom Izzo and the way he coaches and what you're getting out of these basketball teams. I don't know if we ever see Michigan State be that dominant team, much less this would be a season where it should be absolutely doable. This is a horrible Big Ten. The Big Ten is absolute trash this year. Like, you've got Purdue and you've got Maryland. Those are like the only, or Indiana as well. Those are the only three teams that are ranked. And honestly, what they're doing inside the conference isn't very good. You've got Michigan. We're looking towards the Big Ten tournament, and Michigan right now is rated as a three seed. And I don't think Michigan's any good. Michigan's not a good basketball team at this moment in time. So this would have been a season for Michigan State to capitalize on it and really take advantage. And they haven't been able to do it. And I don't know if we get back to those glory days under Tom Izzo where Michigan State is making Final Fours and making runs at the national championship and basically blowing up tournaments because they're so damn good. I think some of it, again, has to do with the stubbornness of what Izzo brings to the table and him feeling and believing this is the way things have to go and him not necessarily being open enough to make those adjustments and being open enough to kind of change some of his coaching strategy. You're right. You're up three and you've got basically 20 seconds left. Just foul a guy, send him to the line, force him to hit two shots, get the rebound, and then they're going to foul you. And you're just going to go back and forth. I mean, we've seen this play out. We know how it's supposed to work. And look, if you're going to lose it because your team can't clean up the glass on the defensive side, you know what? That's your fault. But defensively, you should have the edge there. You should be able to go up and get that rebound if it's going to clang off the iron. So I'm kind of in lockstep with you. I'm not sure what Michigan State does here. I don't know what the next direction for Michigan State is, because to me, it feels like at certain points, Tom Izzo has really good teams, like really, really good teams. And it feels like Tom Izzo is the one that holds back those teams. So I don't know how you kind of get by that or how you get past that.
Yeah, innovative. Do something innovative. Get some good players and then coach them up hard. And then really, in the end, it's about fundamentals, using analytics in the best way. It's one thing to have a tool, but it's another thing to know how to use that tool. And hopefully that lesson can potentially spark Tom Izzo to change his defensive mindset late in games in regards to these collapses, which is, hey, if you start noticing momentum's getting built, you got to do something about it real quick and not let a team like Iowa take advantage. And then on the other flip side, you see Wisconsin, they don't foul, and basically Hunter Dickinson saves the Michigan season. Mm-hmm. It was crazy to watch that as well, to see that go down in the other manner in which Wisconsin got punished for not fouling. And I think that sparked Michigan. And what it really did was open the eyes to a lot of casual fans and those that are watching that, man, Michigan's got a decent backcourt. Kobe, man, Kobe looks like a young player that maybe people need to want to stay at Michigan. I think Hunter Dickinson, one more year at Michigan, you surround him with a couple more lethal weapons shooting, and you got the development of that backcourt. Maybe the Michigan team kind of taking a page out of Michigan State, and they're peaking at the right time. I just thought that that shot by Hunter Dickinson can do a lot. That can propel a team in a Big Ten tournament. That can propel a team in the NCAA tournament, especially at home with how critical that was for Michigan. I just thought that, you know, some will say too little too late, but I think that this can be a spark for Juwan Howard, who really needed it. I thought that was one of the bigger games for Michigan at home against Wisconsin. What do you think it means? What does and what can the potential of that game have for the Michigan Wolverine basketball team?
So you want Hunter Dickinson to basically stay until he's 35 at Michigan.
Yes,
Totally get it. I totally get it. Look, I think there's a couple of things that you can kind of take out of this. I think it was one, it was a big win, obviously. But two, they have a position. They're in a position now where they've got to win a few games to get into the tournament. If you look at a lot of the bracketology that's out there, they are one of the last four teams out. So they've got some work to do because they've done such a piss poor job throughout the season. And it does feel a little bit like it is it's too much, a little bit too late here. And look, Kobe Bufflin is a good player. I think the team works better when Jet Howard's not necessarily on the court. So, you know, that's the coach's son. I don't know how that works out. I don't know if Juwan can kind of get out of his own way and has the balls enough to maybe bring his son in off the bench. I don't know. But I think if you're Michigan, the win can help propel you to get these next two victories, and then you'll get into the Big Ten tournament. And if you win these next two games, you should have one of those automatic buys. And then you just have to win a couple of games, maybe two games in the Big Ten tournament, and you should find yourself in the NCAA tournament. So the way I'm looking at it, Michigan has to win basically four of their next five games. If they can win four of their next five games, they will find themselves in the tournament. If they don't, if they lose any one of these next two games and they lose one of the first two games in the Big Ten tournament, they're on the outside looking in. They're going to the NIT. So good luck with that. I think it's a big enough win that it can help propel you, but I think there's a lot of work that Michigan still has to do. And I don't know if the team is mature enough for that. And look, a lot of that goes to the head coach. I've been out on Juwan Howard since the majority of this season. I think Juwan Howard has done a really piss poor job with putting the best lineup out there. I think he's done a piss poor job with managing the emotion of this team. I think he's done a piss poor job of really helping to cultivate these young men into grown ass men. I think he's done a really bad job of that. Also, this is a guy who has punched other head coaches. This is a guy who has had a lot of different altercations on the court with either referees or with coaches. So I don't necessarily know if there's a good enough leadership coming from the top down for this program to necessarily be successful. All that being said, they're in a position to play themselves into the tournament. So they just have to win four of their next five games, and I think they punched their ticket.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. March Madness is here. Man, college basketball has the potential to be very wild, very wide open. Again, like in the last 3 years, there's an opportunity for a lot of teams to do a lot of things. So we'll see how it plays out. Big Ten tournament around the corner. Michigan State will finish up their week this Saturday against Ohio State, and you'll see what Michigan's able to do with the momentum now, the renewed momentum that they were able to gain from a critical big-time win against the Wisconsin Badgers. So I think both teams, Michigan, Michigan State, kind of, you know, under the radar a little bit, have the potential to do some things, but also have the potential to flame out, just like a lot of college teams, and that's what you get. And that's why a lot of people do like March Madness, because you'd never know who's going to kind of peek out from under the shadows to become one of those teams. So it'll be interesting to see and follow. But yeah, obviously, hoops just hasn't been as rewarding. Real fast, I have to get your sense of it. We got like 120 seconds. Probably two of the most disappointing games for the Red Wings. When your season's on the line and you have two games against the same team, to get your ass kicked probably, to me, sent the message to Steve Yzerman that probably selling, taking a first-round offer is probably not a bad idea if a team offers it for Tyler Bertuzzi. It kind of lends... Listen, if the team got to the postseason, you would basically be relying on Husso to get hot, but it kind of has a feel of a five-game elimination if the Wings did get to the postseason. So you could maybe could add a backup goalie, maybe you could add something, but it was kind of disheartening to see the Wings get their ass kicked in two games against Ottawa. I watched every second of both games, and boy, was it uninspiring. But their caveat is the officials were fucking horrible and were anti-Wings in every capacity, but the Wings did themselves in, and Hedberg did not do well by letting up some soft goals too.
Yeah, it's frustrating if you're a Wings fan, right? I think that Ottawa showed up and they basically had a completely different mentality. They were angry. They played as if their season was on the line. They played as if they were sending a message to their front office, like, hey, get us more guys. We can make a run. Detroit played much softer, and that is not what you wanted to see, especially coming off of last week where we talked about it, right? It kind of felt like they had a 4 or 5 game stretch where they really needed to string some wins together to send a message to their front office to go get some more guys. It feels like Detroit is either going to A, stand pat, because there's been a ton of big moves that have already taken place in the NHL with guys moving around. Detroit's either going to stand pat, or they might trade off a guy like Tyler Bertuzzi and try to get something back in return. So it'll be interesting to see what takes place in the next, we'll say 24 hours or so, for the Detroit Red Wings, with the trade deadline looming on Friday. So it'll be interesting to see what takes place, man. But yeah, it was kind of a piss poor performance in my estimation.
Make sure you follow Adam on Twitter at Adam R S T R O Z. Our 60 minutes just flew by. Literally, that's the other part about it. Literally, the other reason I love recording is because we just fire up the broadcast and 60 minutes goes by in the most fun and entertaining aspect. Follow Adam on Twitter at AdamRSTROZ. Follow the network at Detroit Podcast. Let us know anything that you heard today, if you agree with or disagree with, if you think maybe the Spartans or Wolverines have a run in them, let us know. I'm curious to see. If there's a take that you have about the Lions, we always want to hear your thoughts about the Lions and their offseason and what you're thinking about the Combine. We'll be tweeting as well at Detroit Podcast. Our time's come to a close. Episode 500. Many more. Cuz, hope for another 500 in the future. Thanks, everybody, for being a supporter of the Detroit Sports Podcast Network.